Hi, thanks for coming out to my talk. My name is Brianna Wyatt, and I'm a grad student at Oklahoma State University. I'd just like to acknowledge my co-authors on this project, Tyson Auctioner, Chris Fiebrick, and Chris Neal. Today I'm going to be talking about estimating groundwater recharge using the Oklahoma Mesonet. Just wanted to start off by introducing this idea that Oklahoma is in what you might consider a recharge data drought, in that the recharge data that we have are often decades old, and the studies themselves are often few and far between. A prime example of this is the map that I've shown here, which is the most recently published groundwater recharge date for the state of Oklahoma. I know it's small. I'm going to show it again in a future slide. But one of the problems with these recharge rates being so old is that often they don't reflect current climatic conditions. And specifically with this map, it was made using the base flow method, the stream-based flow method, which may underestimate actual recharge because upflow or upstream water uptake isn't taken into account using that method. So each of these problems with current recharge estimates led us to ask the question, well, what can we do using current data to try to improve these estimates? Which led us to turn to the Oklahoma Mesonet. The Oklahoma Mesonet is a system of 120 hydrometeorological monitoring sites throughout the state. They're shown here as black dots. As you can see, they're well spread out throughout the entire state. There's at least one station in every county. And since 1996, soil moisture has been recorded at each of these sites at depths of 5 centimeters, 25 centimeters, and 60 centimeters. I'd also like to point out that, as you can see, many of these Mesonet sites are located above aquifers in the state of Oklahoma. Some of the key aquifers are the Ogallala Aquifer, I can get the mouse. The Ogallala Aquifer here in the Panhandle, the Rush Springs, the Garber-Wellington, and the Arbuckle-Simpson Aquifer. So what do these soil moisture data have to do with groundwater? Well, we know the soil hydraulic properties at each of these Mesonet sites thanks to previous research done by our group at Oklahoma State. So taking these soil hydraulic conductivity values and using the soil moisture data from the Mesonet sites and implying a unit gradient or gravity-driven flow assumption, we're able to estimate the drainage that occurs here at the 60-centimeter depth, which is the depth of that the deepest soil moisture sensor at each of these sites. The working hypothesis of this entire project was that these drainage rates at 60 centimeters were greater than or equal to the actual recharge that occurs at the water table. So how do we get these actual drainage rates? Well, the soil moisture data that comes out is actually in the form of a temperature differential, because the soil moisture sensors actually consist of a thermocouple surrounded by a ceramic matrix. And the raw data is a temperature differential that is measured when a heat pulse is sent into the sensor. So to convert these soil moisture data, or these temperature differential data, into a hydraulic conductivity value, the first step is using this equation, this exponential equation, where A and C are simply calibration constants. We have the delta T, which is the temperature differential, and this yields a matrix potential value. The next step is to take that matrix potential value and plug it into this equation, where alpha, m, and n are just shape parameters of the water retention curve for each of these sites, and this yields an effective saturation, or a normalized water content value. The last step is to plug the effective saturation into this equation, where we have a conductivity value estimated for each saturation. Here, KO is a matching point conductivity, and again, L is just a shape parameter of the water retention curve. So what do these drainage rates actually look like? Well, here I have summarized them at a large scale or an aquifer scale. So you can see in the first column, we have the name of the aquifer, In the second column, we have the number of mesonet sites that's located above each of those aquifers. The third column is the median drainage rate of the mesonet sites located above that aquifer. The fourth column is a range of previously published recharge rates. These aren't associated with this study. They're just included for the sake of comparison. And then the last column is the number of sources that actually contribute to that previous recharge rate. And what I want to point out here is that each of the median estimated mesonet drainage rates falls within that range of previously published recharge rates, with the exception, of course, of the Arkansas River, for which only one other study has been done. And even so, the drainage rate and the previous recharge rate line up fairly well. So now that we've looked at sort of a large scale, well, what about if you narrow it down to the point scale? How do you know that those drainage rates are actually correct? We turned to modeling using HYDROS-1D. We chose four sites. They're shown here, circled in red. We have here the Goodwell site, Tipton, Worcester, and Miami. And these sites were chosen because they each represent one of the different climatic regimes that you see in Oklahoma. So there were two steps to this modeling process. The first was to optimize the soil hydraulic parameters. And we did this at each of these four sites using measured soil moisture data for the years 2006 and 2007, which were an abnormally dry year and an abnormally wet year. The next step was then to take those optimized parameters and actually put them back in the model for a validation time period. And we ran a validation from 1998 to 2014. Now, if we look during the calibration period, how did the estimated water content line up with the measured water content? Here we have on the y-axis the volumetric water content at depths of 5, 25, and 60 centimeters. And on the x-axis, you have the year, so 2006 and 2007. And as you can see, the mesonet, the measured water content values are the blue dots, and the model estimated water contents are shown as the orange line behind the dots. As you can see, HYDROS was able to capture the volumetric water content dynamics fairly well, with the exception of time periods when the water content remained high for a long period of time. HYDROS tended to jump fairly high initially and then decrease very rapidly. And this is shown most prominently right here at the 25 centimeter depth, where HYDROS overshoots initially and then drops very rapidly. Despite these small discrepancies that we see, the mean water content, the mean measured and mean estimated water content at each of these depths only differed by 1%. So very good alignment there. So if we look at the resulting drainage rates from this calibration period, I apologize, I should have said this earlier. I focused in on the Goodwell site, so this is just for one site. If we look at the drainage rates, the mesonet drainage rate here is shown with the blue line, and the HYDROS estimated flux rate is shown with the orange line. We have water flux on the y-axis, and again, year on the x-axis. And as you can see, the mesonet drainage rate does fluctuate more than the HYDROS estimate does. So the dynamics are off a little bit. But if we look at the overall drainage rate, the mesonet estimated 19 millimeters per year for these 2 years, and HYDROS estimated 12 millimeters per year for these 2 years. So if we go to the full validation, what did the drainage rates look like for the entire 1998 to 2014 validation simulation? Here I've included all four sites, so Goodwell, Miami, Tipton, and Worcester, and we have both the mesonet and the HYDROS estimated drainage rates for the validation period, as well as in this last column, the percent difference between the two. And that's what I would really like to draw your attention to. The percent differences here range from, for these four sites, from 7.5% to 46%. And this indicates that our mesonet drainage rates are, you know, correct within roughly plus or minus 50%, depending on which site you're considering. Could be better, maybe worse if there's a site that is worse than the ones that we simulated. So another thing that we did using Hydrus was to try to evaluate this unit gradient assumption that we had made. This is basically a diagram of the pressure head profile for the top 1% of flux events at this particular site. On the y-axis, you see the soil depth, and on the x-axis, you have the pressure head or the matrix potential. And we were assuming that, you know, there's a unit gradient flow at 60 centimeters, which is indicated by that red dotted line. Unfortunately, as you can see at that red dotted line, there is no unit gradient. However, if you go to about 100 centimeters, there is a unit gradient. So even though this simulation shows that this unit gradient assumption may not be applicable at all of these sites, our drainage estimates do line up really well with historical estimates, as I've shown at the aquifer scale, and then also with the Hydrus estimates that we made during these simulations. So this is an enlarged version of that previous map that I showed. And as you can see, the recharge rates estimated using this method range from 2.5 millimeters per year in the panhandle to 254 millimeters per year down in southeast Oklahoma. So you've got spans two orders of magnitude across the state. Well, as I mentioned before, this map is 30 years old or more. And one of the main goals of our project was to try to replicate this map using our estimated drainage rates. And I was able to do that. Our map compares fairly well with drainage rates ranging from 7 millimeters per year in the panhandle to over 200 in eastern Oklahoma. So the drainage rates line up fairly well. The pattern of recharge lines up very well with the previous map. And the median drainage rate was 61 millimeters per year. So, some basic conclusions. Our Hydrus 1D simulations did show that a unit gradient assumption may not be applicable at every site, but our drainage rates do line up, like I said, they line up well with historical estimates, and they agree with these Hydrus estimates within 50% on either side. Like I just said, these large-scale or aquifer-scale estimates do agree well with previous recharge estimates. And there are a number of unique advantages with this method that just don't apply with other methods. The first is that we have a long-term soil moisture record. We have nearly 20 years of soil moisture data for the entire state of Oklahoma. The second is that we have these statewide estimates thanks to the mesonet. The third is that these drainage rates are able to be updated as long as the mesonet is intact. So as long as we continue to get these data, we're able to update these drainage rates. And the fourth is that it's a low cost because there is no cost to run the mesonet and to collect these data. And with that, I'd like to take any questions.
Thank you very much, Brianna. Any questions for Brianna?
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm sorry, what was it? Okay, so the question was, have we seen any long-term changes in the water content in the last 20 years? Okay. I don't know, right off the top of my head. From the figures that I've looked at, it is variable year to year, but I haven't seen any major changes as far as, you know, significant increases or decreases over the last 20 years.
I like what you're doing with the data from the net. So I'm concerned about the there's quite a long chain between your temperature measurements of those probes and getting to the final flux.
Mm-hmm.
Did you do much sensitivity analysis of what, say, minor error in temperature or minor error in calibration curve?
I did not, as far as the drainage rates go. I did do a significant amount of that when I was looking at the hydrous estimates, but as far as the actual mezzanette drainage rates go, no, I didn't.
First, thanks for an excellent presentation.
Thank you.
And my question is about the fraction of the drainage out of the precipitation, which will be an important factor. What is consistent? What can you say about that?
So the question was, is the fraction of drainage as a the fraction of precipitation that becomes drainage, was that consistent over time? That's a good question, and I haven't looked at that. I wouldn't think so initially, but I haven't looked at it.
Does your precipitation, is there precipitation gradient west to east?
Yes, very much so. Yes, the panhandle, the site that I was farthest west, much lower precipitation than in the east.
That will be our last question.
Is there ever any capillary rise at 60 centimeters?
Yeah, so the question was, is there capillary rise at 60 centimeters? As far as we know, no, there isn't, but there may be a restrictive clay layer in some of the far eastern sites that restricts downward water flow, which may make some of these estimates unreasonable. But
okay, right, you're allowed.
So the question is, did we consider the geologic structure beneath the soils, hydrogeologic structure beneath the soils? Yeah, so simple answer, no. In that unit gradient assumption, we considered a unit gradient flow regardless of the structure.
Thank you very much, Glenn.